Hello, and welcome to episode 27 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. This week on the show, I am joined by Shane Lawrence. Shane is a teacher of drama, computers, film study, film production out of Canada, as well as the host of the Ed Podcast. As you might have guessed from his Canadian locale, I first met Shane through Voice Ed Radio, and we quickly bonded over our inability to be serious or stay on a single topic. In fact, I was recently on an episode of Shane's podcast, and he titled the episode Two Squirrels in a Cage, which is a pretty appropriate topic. Shane and I talk a lot in this episode about authentic learning, environment design, cross-curricular collaboration, always trying to iterate and improve your work, reflecting on the fly, and the importance of building connections with your students. As you can see, we kind of go all over the place, as you might expect from the title of his show. But for now, go ahead and sit back and enjoy episode 27 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Shane Lawrence. Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Streffler, and I am joined today by Shane Lawrence, the host of the Ed Podcast, which is one of the simplest and yet appropriate names for a podcast. Like, I feel like that probably should have already been taken, but somehow you were the first to think of it. And Shane, how's it going tonight?
It's going really good. It's going really good. I'm happy. I got a coffee mug in hand, and I am cozily ensconced in my bedroom, a guest bedroom downstairs, and I'm ready to chat. Feeling good.
Excellent. If you could, besides, I mentioned your podcast, but if you could tell my audience a little bit about what you do, what's your day job, what's your passion, what you love in, what's life?
That's a lot of big questions.
I know.
I'll go for the...
All crammed into...
Yeah. Well, I'll go for the low-hanging fruit and say, what my job is, because that's easy. I teach junior high drama, grade 7, 8, and 9. I don't know what that translates to where you are, but grade 7 and 9 drama. I teach computers 7 and 8, and then next semester I'll also be picking up film studies 8, film studies 9, and then a high school combined 10, 11, 12 film studies class as well. So that's kind of a jam.
So you're kind of all over the place.
Well, it's all pretty, it's all pretty firmly ensconced in the creative arts, I'd like to think. I mean, even the computers is very much, it leans towards the creative arts as well. So I think it's all of a piece. But this is my first year teaching computers, and I know that I'm going to be sort of redrafting a lot of what I teach to make it fit a little bit better. So, I'm looking into some gaming stuff now and really thinking that might be a good fit for future years. So, I enjoy it.
You've mentioned on your show, and I am a listener of your show as well, but
you
mentioned
much.
A couple times sort of like passively about like film studies and stuff. And that sounds like a really cool course. Like, what's really included in that one?
Well, it changes as it goes from grade 8 through grade 9. I mean, grade 8 through grade 12. The first year that I teach it, it's really just an overview. It's getting your feet wet. So I give kids a little bit of everything. We do films all the way from the 1920s up to, 2010s. We cover multiple genres. And then as we go higher through the grades, we get into, more focused study. So by the time we're in high school, grade 8, we watch like 14 films, maybe a couple more. By the time we get to high school, we're watching maybe 6 or 7, but they're far more focused in on specific genres or specific ideas. And we get a little more academic, of course. Then along the way, in all the grade levels, we do, film production as well. It's honestly, it's a bit much. Because it's you're trying to study film and you're also trying to make films. And again, as you get higher in the grades, the more serious the students get about the production side of things. So, grade 8, it's film studies with some production. And then in grade 10, 11, 12, it's film production, capital F, capital P, with a little bit of film study, as much as we can cram in because they get going on it. So, and it's what I like about it is it's cross-curricular learning to the max. It is because it encompasses all areas. And again, especially in high school, we actually, we pull in the drama program. We pull in the digital media program. So, it's crazy because, there's groups. I literally don't know how big they are until we actually premiere the films at the movie theater. And I see them all gathered together, for photos. And there's like 20 kids in a group. And it's just mind blowing. But they manage it, and I just help produce. And it's fantastic. I love it. I mean, I don't know. I can say more. I could fill the next hour easily with this stuff.
Yeah, you know, you hit on kind of what my, you know, not that you've done a ton of talk about, you know, you just talk about it in passing, like I said, or passing comments.
Yeah.
But I felt that same part even from the little bits I've heard you say before about how it seems to be a combination of production and study at the same time, which I feel like with high school is a big ask of students.
It is. But at the same time, it's like anything, you know, we talk about having authentic tasks, right? And the true test of whether a task is authentic or not, I think, is how hard the students are willing to work for it. Because when they sense that something is truly authentic, it's truly worthwhile, they've got a real audience, they've got a real product they're making that has value beyond the four walls of your classroom. When they sense that, they will go to bat over and over and over again to do whatever it is they need to do to make that thing work. And I'm speaking purely out of personal experience, out of, you know, watching my students work. And that's grade 8 all the way through grade 12. The students will work unbelievably hard because they believe in what they're doing. And they see the results in the end. You know they've got a real audience waiting for them on the other end. So there's that weight and there's a desire just to do the best work they can. So it matters. So they work really, really hard at it.
Cool. I dig that. And that's anytime you can get students that vested in what they're doing is always going to, you know, increase the learning factor for sure.
Well, absolutely. I mean, what I tell the kids too, at the end of it, after we, you know, do their festival and you know, they sit in the theater or, you know, in the audience and they cringe and they die a thousand deaths because they, you know, in front of an audience, they see all the mistakes they've made and everything else. And I tell them, well, if you see the mistakes, that's great. It means you're learning, right? If you don't spot any mistakes, then, you know, then you failed. That's when you've truly failed. But of course, none of them ever are like that. You know, they're always like, oh my gosh, I should have changed this and I should have done that. I'm like, that's awesome. That means you're learning for real. And also you've accomplished something great, in between that, right? So, yeah, I mean, I love it when students take film studies 8 and then they do 9 or 10, because then the first day back, to class in grade 9 or on the high school classes is we actually watch previous films from previous years, which they hate. But in that sort of like hate, but don't hate kind of way.
Right. Yep.
And, it's fun, you know, cause again, they get to, you know, die a thousand deaths all over again, but it sets the tone and they see what they did and how they can change and make it better. So, you know, there is this real learning happening just, you know, by no, you know, machinations of my own other than I've given them the opportunity to make something real.
So do you guys have 8 through 12 in one building then, or
we have,
are you on two buildings?
We have 7 through 12 in one, 7 through 12. In one building. Okay. We actually have another building that's K through 6 as well, but we have very minimal interaction with that crew because they're, you know, doing their K through 6 stuff. So I don't know.
Is that how most of the schools are structured in your area? Or is that unique?
No, that's fairly unique to us. I think, you know, the traditional structure is we have K through 6, which is primary. Then we have a junior high, which is 7 through 9. And then we have senior high, which is 10 through 12. And those are all separate buildings. But I mean, you can find everything. And totally depends on population size and everything else. Like we're a pretty small school. We're like 600 kids. So 7 through 12. So yeah, it's not huge.
We have 600 freshmen.
That is mind blowing. I don't know. I think it'd be a lot of fun teaching in a school that size sometimes, you know, a little more variety and,
There's definitely a lot of variety. It kind of depends on the day when sometimes you feel like you're trying to steer the Titanic. That's not always the best, you know, but otherwise there are always kids to keep you entertained. That's for sure.
Oh,
there's, you never get to know them all.
Yeah. And I'm on the other end. I literally know pretty much every single kid in the building. You know, so totally the other way around, but, anyways, it's a good setup. I like it, you know?
So given your wide range of course load, where would you say your, and you can even go larger than your own class experience if you want, but where would you say your passion lies right now? What is it that gets you up in the morning right now?
Well, I'm not teaching it at the moment, but I mean, film studies is my baby. It really is. Okay. Not to be, you know, banging on the same gong for the whole thing. I know I should probably have something a little more saucy than that, but, but I mean, I think, the thing that gets me most excited, regardless of the area, is when I know that I am giving my kids worthwhile opportunity. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, there's days where I give them assignments and I'm like, well, this is a hoop to jump through. We're just establishing some basic skills so that we can move on to the next thing and hopefully use it in a more interesting way that's more attuned to problem solving and that sort of thing. But yeah, there's days where it's just like, okay, do this, go here, turn left, up two flights of stairs. Okay, turn right, press this button. Good, you're done. So, it's not, I'd like to say it's shining beautiful rainbows every day, but it's not. But those days that when I can give the students something and it's like you see their eyes light up because it's like, wow, this is real, this is legit, then I know that those are the days that I get really excited for sure, no matter the subject area. But, film studies is just the easy fit because I know every single day is for real. Like I can walk in with a lesson plan and say, okay, so I've got this thing planned. What would you like to do? And they're like, we need to go and we got to call this location and we got to find out this. And I got to talk to this person who's designing our costumes and we need to find a makeup artist and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, okay, off you go. And I know that they're involved and they're invested and, I don't worry about it. And that's great. Like I love those moments too. So that's what I live for.
That's a great answer. I appreciate that answer. Well, before we get to my first real question, I do have one more to talk about. Just one more thing to talk about here as we get introduced. And could you tell me a little bit about the Ed podcast and how that started and maybe what your philosophy is? It's kind of it's a cool show. I really like it, but I'm wondering what your take on your own show is.
Oh, awesome. Okay. First of all, I feel bad because I didn't ask you a question like that on my podcast and I really should have because I'll just say, I like your podcast a lot, but I'll go back and edit in something nice. For mine, I just, it's whole thing started by accident. It started out purely as a tech podcast because our school was going BYOD, bring your own device. And we just wanted to kind of work our way through that. And then I kind of liked it, so I changed it over to Ed to be more broad ranging. And then I started interviewing people inside my building. And then I thought, well, this is going to tap out pretty quickly. So, onto Twitter and away we go. And here we are. And so it really was a process of discovery. I mean, I'm not the kind of person who sits back and plans and is like, what do I want my brand to be? Like that is really not me. I mean, this is my fourth year podcasting and I'm like, okay, I think I've got the format down now. And I'm still tweaking it a little bit here and there. And just was actually before I got on air with you, I was thinking, oh, I should say this instead. So, I'm still working through it. But ultimately, I know what's emerged over the whole thing is I just wanted to have conversations with other educators that I hope other educators can find edifying and useful. I do check-ins as well. And that was, I'll get to that in a second, but the conversations, which is three quarters of what I do, I just wanted to have people be able to walk away from every episode and say, there's something I could do in my class. There's a good idea. And I think I've managed that. And I just wanted to do it in a way that's not, like my tagline is about, having, there's no inspirational quotes. There's no lists. It's just honest conversations with teachers. Cause I mean, almost as a rule, if I see an article that's like 10 things you can do in your class right now, it's like, I barely have time for one, so I'm not going to read that article. And not to say that those aren't good articles, and I'm sure a lot of people get a lot of value out of it, but my podcast is an extension of me. So I didn't want to go that route where it's like, here's X number of things you can do today. I just wanted to just talk about the reality of teaching where things aren't always perfect, where we don't have 10, we don't immediately off the top of our heads have 17 things we can do to calm an unruly class. Like it's not on the top of my head. I don't know about you, but,
No, God, no.
Thank you. The good.
That's... Anybody that listened to me on your show will understand that I am not that prepared. It's just whatever pops in my head.
Well, good. At the very least, we can affirm each other. So that's sort of, I think my brand is just trying to, just shoot me now. I hate saying that. I've said the word way too many times already, but I really do want to be, authentic, real. I want to just have conversations with teachers where we're just open to just talking about what we do, and saying, these are the things that work. These are things that don't work. These are things that drive me crazy. And also even, lately too, I've been allowing conversations to go you know, outside of teaching as well, for just letting us be human, you know, talking about, you know, what wine we're currently drinking, as you may know, or whatever it happens to be. Cause I think that's really edifying too. Cause I know, you know, for myself as a teacher, as an educator, until I started podcasting, especially, I really felt really isolated, and every single thing I did, I would just question, like, do other educators have bad days? Do other educators, you know, lose their cool sometimes? Do other educators do this or that? And so it's been really good for me to just discover that I am not alone. And so if I can spread that idea, that message to other educators, I think that's worth, you know, hanging in there and keeping on doing what I'm doing. So
yeah. Absolutely. And I think part of the reason you and I have hit it off so fast, and spent, like, whenever went on it or different projects or connecting on Twitter or whatever, is we both come to this thing in a very similar light. You know, we both, I'm right there with you in terms of natural conversations, no taglines, no punchlines, no whatever. It's just whatever pops in our head. And just, I feel like you get two people with good ideas sitting together, They're gonna have good things to say without a list or you know, a gimmick or whatever you might call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I hope so.
It's been working out so far for me, and I enjoy listening to your show. So I think we're doing all right.
Right on. How many episodes are you in now? Like 23, 4?
24, 5, somewhere in there. Right on. This will be like maybe 24 or 25.
Right on.
Yeah, that's like that feels like, I don't know, like every 5 episodes feels like a milestone to me. Like, I don't think I'm going to make it that far usually. So
Yeah. I'm looking forward to like 50. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm probably just going to, you know, go in my backyard and shoot off a Roman candle and say, woo, but you know,
I like that. And you should record just the audio, and that'll be a great, like, trust me, it's pretty.
It looks so great, everyone. Absolutely. That's what I'm going to do now. I love it.
All right. I appreciate it. Cool. Well, you know, I think that'll lead us pretty completely without transition into my first main question. As you know, as you've listened to my show a couple times, my first question for you is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Yeah. So when you asked me that, I'm glad I you know, made sure I was like listening in and like, okay, well, you know, I was raking leaves a few, like a month ago, thinking, okay, what is the biggest problem? But honestly, for me, and I mean, oh, okay, I'm overthinking it. Let me just say it. I think that one of the biggest issues right now is environment design. Just the design of the buildings we work in, I think is stifling. I think it's a physical manifestation of how outdated a lot of what we do in education is. You know, I just started teaching computers this year, and my computer lab is literally just screen, lined up all in a row, just rows and rows of computer screens. And it drives me bonkers, because this isn't what a collaborative work environment should look like. This does not engender creative thought or teamwork or anything. Like, kids want to move around and they're tripping over each other. And I mean, classrooms are the same. I mean, I can't imagine another industry where you could look at photos of a workspace from 100 years ago and compare them to now and have them look that similar, if not just identical. Like, that really bothers me. So I think a lot of it, yeah, is just environment design. And I mean, I know that people have, you know, there's obviously people experimenting with this. And, you know, there's open classrooms and that sort of thing. And, you know, that's had its ups and downs. But again, I think it's just, yeah, the actual physical environment is a physical manifestation of a lot of the outdated principles that are in, you know, baked into our curriculum. I'm speaking from my perspective. I'm in Canada, so I don't know how it is for you in Florida, but it just seems to me like this is just, you know, these are signposts of real issues that we have at a really base systemic level. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. I agree with you completely, and I feel like the problem there, I mean, obviously the problem in order to fix a lot of these things is funding is one problem in of itself, because to replace physical things takes real money. So that's a problem to begin with. But I think you're right in that those aren't even conversations that are being prioritized at this point to be able to think about, Yeah, we share pictures on Pinterest of like, look at this cool media center. But how many districts and states are putting the funding in place to say, okay, go make that media center. Don't just go dream about it and go make it. You know, how do you actually go about doing that? And I've actually been lucky. My media specialist is trying a lot of new things and is willing to do that. And every time she's like, man, I wish I could like move this desk, but it's on the, it's like attached to the ground. And I look around the desk and I go, yeah, we can detach it. I got a toolkit. You want to do this? And she's like, sure. So I get lucky in the sense that I have a media specialist and my office is located in the media center. So I'm invested in making that an open or more open space. So
yeah,
I'm like, yeah, like today I'm taking apart desks. Like, let's awesome. Do that. We actually had we went one-on-one. So we had a computer lab in the media center and there were all these long rows of tables that were like 20 feet long and attached together. And she's like, there's nothing I can do with all these things. You can't even slide them around. And I looked at it. I was like, well, if we take apart every other one, you'd end up with like smaller tables you could move around. And so until she had the money to buy actual flexible seating and movable desks, she had half as many, but these like actual usable tables. So, you know, I think some of it is you kind of have to make do with what you have.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But, Crumb, you said something a while back and it totally triggered something and now it's slipping away. It's slipping away.
Maybe priorities. I feel like that was what I said when you started.
I like the image of you just like taking apart desks with like hammers and screwdrivers. It's like, you know, you're making real change when you actually have like physical tools in your hand and you're tearing apart the space, right? Like that's just, that's beautiful. Here's what it is. I think, you know, our environments look a lot like our curriculum. Like our curriculum is siloed into these specific, subject areas. And I mean, that in itself, I love the look on my students' faces when, you know, like I used to teach English way back in the day. And, you know, there'd be times where math would come up. I'd need to just calculate something. And I'm slightly above average, I'll toot my own horn with mental math. And so I'll start doing mental math out loud and the kids will look at me like, you're our English teacher. What are you doing? That's math. You can't do that. And I just look at them and I'm like, kids, there's no subjects in life. And, you know, it's just like these little like mushroom clouds of like just because their minds are blown, you know? And our environments reinforce this idea that English happens in the English room and math happens in the math room. You know, to the credit of our school, I think we're slowly moving away from that, like slowly. I mean, you know, talk about steering the Titanic, the education system, right? It is not a fast moving animal.
No.
But, you know, our environment is built to, you know, reinforce that these are where things happen. And I think, you know, if we can get away from the idea that specific subjects happen in specific geographical spaces, the better off we're going to be. You know, if we can create, it takes a ton of work. Cause I mean, you're not, you know, designing, say, you know, tasks for, you know, this one specific area in English or this one specific math skill, right? You've got to, you know, you'd have to get together with your colleagues, with the people you supposedly work with in the building and design these tasks that, encompass all these different ideas. And I mean, there are schools that do that and man, that's just the coolest thing, right?
I love that you say that you got to get together with the people you supposedly work with. because you're so right in that statement.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, I say that these are my coworkers, but there's people in the building. I've been in that building for 11 years and there are people I have never seen teach, like not for a second. So they're not really coworkers. They're just, you know, subcontractors that work in the same building, right? At the times that I can connect with other educators and work together and, you know, let's come back to that old saw, film studies. But seriously, you know, I work with other educators in that, like at the start of the year, we take 90 kids and cram them into a room designed for 30 people. And we say, okay, these are your classmates. You know, I've got the digital media kids. I got the drama kids. We stick them all in the same room with my film studies kids. And we go over what the course looks like. And so we encompass multiple disciplines and, you know, incredibly broad skill sets. But I wish that more education looked like that because, yeah, this whole, like, you know, you do your thing in your corner, I'll do my thing in my corner. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it reflects, you know, the real world. I hope you can hear my little air quotes in my voice, you know, because that's the other thing that blows your students' mind when they say, when I get in the real world, I'm like, whoa, 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 you're in the real world.
Yep.
But, yeah, so, yeah, I think that, the more we can bring together all these different curricula, you know, the better off we're going to be. And I guess the more push it's going to put towards actually changing our environment just out of necessity, because the spaces we have don't fit.
You know, I wonder, does it take something like your film studies class in order, like a curriculum that is more open-ended? Does the structure of a core class curriculum make it impossible to coordinate with others, or does it take someone extraordinary like you going the ground of reaching out and dragging those other teachers into your space?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, getting the whole cross curricular thing happening with film studies, it was 2 years of conversations with one of the digital media teacher. It was 2 years that we would chat on and off before we decided finally, okay, we're going to pull the trigger on this. Like, it was not a quick little, like, let's just join things together and it'll be easy. No, it was like, it was a lot of coordination and a lot of effort to make it happen. And of course, there was zero time to do it. So a lot of it happened just sort of in stolen moments. And we'd specialized in these 30-second long meetings we'd have in hallways while we're just walking opposite directions, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it does take, you know, some effort on the part of the educator. But part of it has to, you know, again, it comes back to being a systemic thing where we do think of education as being, you know, siloed, and it's tidy. It makes sense. It's easy. It's nice that when you can delineate things, it's messy. It's hard when you try and squish things together. But at the same time, I mean, if you want students who are problem solvers, who are investigators, who can plan things, who are curious, and if we just say, nope, this is math, do not go beyond these boundaries. Nope, this is English. Nope, this is social studies or whatever, you know, I think it discourages that. And again, we put the walls between the subjects too, physically. And so, you know, we have to almost untrain our students, because that's how they think. And honestly, that's how I've thought for a really long time, is that, you know, these are the borders and you shall go no further. So pushing outside of that is really, really difficult. But worthwhile.
Yeah, and it's that worthwhile, right? I think that's the critical part, right? Like, it's hard, it is challenging, but it's hard and challenging for us as teachers. Mm-hmm. It's not near, especially starting at the younger grades, it's not nearly as hard and challenging for, you know, kids. It only doesn't make sense to kids because we've taught them it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, for sure. And you know, but once you can actually sort of, you know, chisel away that whatever, that coating that builds up over the years, you know, that tells them this is the way things are. Once you get through to that and kind of get that first little glimmer of light shining into them, you know, it's fun because you see that light come on. They're like, oh, that's cool. So I can actually do this here, but it actually also applies over here in this other course that I'm doing, you know, and that's so much fun to see that. I mean, you know, we got a teacher in our school, and he's just, this guy's on fire. He's always got just so many great ideas. He's thinking that way too. And it's, you know, starting to spread a little bit. And, like he's doing a unit on erosion, in his science class, science 7. And so he's like, I'm teaching computer 7. He's like, get your kids to design 3D buildings, 'cause I want to build this big sand table, and we're going to show how water, you know, erodes soil, and then you can make buildings fall over and stuff. So, you know, it's stuff like that that can happen. And, you know, that's something small, but maybe that's the start of even something bigger, just changing kids' ideas of, like, you're not really, you know, yes, you're in the computers class, but really you're just working on the same problem in a different room and in a different way now. So, you know, I don't know. I love this stuff. It's great. And it's just, if you can tell from my babbling, it's just kind of this big crazy storm in my head right now that still needs some sorting out, obviously. But I get really excited about it because it is just so much fun to see this stuff happen. And, you know, I just remember, you know, when I first combined digital media and film studies, the two classrooms were literally as far away from each other as they could possibly be in the building. They were like opposite ends of the building. But man, what a rush I got just from seeing kids saying, I got to go talk to my cinematographer. So I'm going to go. And then they just leave classroom and it's, you know, usually it's like, wait, where are you going? Hey, what are you doing? But it's like, no, they're going for a production meeting and they'd be meeting in the library together with, you know, their producer and whatever else. And like, that's just, man, there's no feeling like that just to see that happening. So yeah, I'm all for this. Tear the walls down.
I like it. I literally tear them all down. I say, go for it. Yeah, grab a toolkit.
As long as they're not load bearing. Keep them up at the load bearing.
Right. Otherwise, yeah, look for load bearing walls. Find an engineer to make sure it's safe to take the walls down.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Furniture you can experiment with. Walls, maybe not so much. Okay.
Yes.
Let's go with your way. It seems safer.
Just don't hire me to knock the walls down because I'm terrible at that stuff.
Wow, cool. Yeah, I love this whole thing. And you know, looking at it from the physical layout as a both a starting point and representation of the larger problem. I think that's a great way to look at it there. So that's great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's going to lead me right into my second question, which is, and you maybe have kind of already touched on it, but I'm going to go with it anyway. So what is something that you are doing that you wish everyone else would do?
You know, this, I was kind of hoping you'd skip this one because, you know, we talked about like the imposter syndrome on my podcast, but you know, no one listens to that thing anyway. So, the imposter syndrome being this whole idea that, you know, no matter how capable you become, you always feel like you're just faking it and that someone at some point is going to just burst into your room and point at you and say, charlatan. And you know, you're suddenly revealed for the fake that you are. So that's how, you know, honestly, I know that feeling is going to be with me till the day I die. Or, well, until the day I retire, I don't know. Then I'll run out of the building. Suckers! Fooled you all! So to that end, I find it really hard to pick out something that I do that I should, you know, want to say to all educators ever that you should do this. Honestly, the one thing I think that every educator should do, and I don't know if it's a really active thing, but is to just be dissatisfied to never be fully satisfied. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. The one thing that drives me, as an educator is doing something and just realizing, this isn't there yet. Right. And maybe it's not quite there, or maybe it's not even close to there, but just, you know, never settling for, well, this kind of works, so I'm just going to stick with it. But really, you know, being willing to go back and do things over. I mean, this is what's driving me towards trying to push outwards, you know, from my course boundaries and get other people involved. And I mean, yeah, film studies was, I'll say, an easy win. It was a lot of work to get it to where it is, but nonetheless, you know, a natural win. But now I'm thinking, you know, in my computers class, how do I get that beyond the walls? And I mean, just even doing the small project where we're printing 3D printing buildings is one small glimmer of that. But yeah, just not being happy, fully happy. You got to have some happiness, I suppose. But yeah, never really settling for what you're doing as being, you know, the end, but always trying to iterate. Cause you know, I've seen teachers that don't. And, you know, in my experience, thankfully, there's not a lot of them, which is good. But the ones that do, it's like, oh, you need to go and do something else, like maybe retire or something.
Or, yeah, you know. I like that. I think it is very easy to become complacent for sure. I think, you know, it's easy to say, and the way I think I hear it more often is, this is the best I can do with what I'm given or what I have to work with or the standards I have or the time I have or whatever. It's never like, this is the best that could possibly be done. I don't think I very often hear like, you could not possibly do better than this. It's always, this is the best because. So I think not only is it to like never be fully satisfied, but find a way to overcome those excuses. I think it's the other part of it for me, but I agree with you that everything can always be better. And I'm with you. There are teachers I run into, especially veteran teachers who I'm supposed to help and support in my role. And they're just like, nope, this is how I've done it forever. It works totally fine.
Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around that. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I tell you, like, it's so funny for me. It's like, you know, not like I'm getting super old here, but I'm approaching middle age, and it's like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not scared about like wrinkles or gray hair or, you know, whatever, osteoporosis. The one thing that scares me the most is that my mind is going to calcify, that I'm going to become set in my ways, and I'm going to just, you know, be unchanging in the way that I think. And I know there's a certain amount of like, you know, biochemistry and, you know, neurological processes that, you know, it makes it harder for you to change your mind as you get older. But that thought just terrifies me. It just scares me so much because I don't want to be like that. So, you know, even in the way that I teach, I do want to try new things all the time, if for no other reason than just to keep exercising my brain so I don't turn into this, you know, well, that's the way it's always been done. Get off my lawn. You know, I don't want to be that person. Cause yeah, that's the thing that scares me about getting old, you know? So, if I can find ways to keep it fresh or even, you know, not change for the sake of change, but change for the sake of improvement, that's great. You know, and maybe, cause maybe the first time you go through a unit, that's the best you can do given the circumstances. And, you know, maybe it's okay. Like I just started a new unit, off a couple weeks ago, actually in my computers class. It's my first time through the course, but I was just like, this is driving me nuts. We need something better than, or not better, but different to add on to this so that this is a little more real. So I made this new course or new unit, and I told my students right at the start, I'm like, this is new for me. I'm trying this out for the first time. This might be a raging dumpster fire, but we're going to give it a shot. you know, parts of it were great. Parts of it were pretty, pretty fiery. We're just wrapping it up, this week actually. And, you know, even in the presentations, you know, I had one kids, they start and they ran for about 5 minutes. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay. Wait a minute. This isn't working. Let's back up. I'm going to give everyone another 10 minutes here. Here's what we need to change about the way we're presenting this, 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 and this. Okay. You've got 10 minutes to just, you know, switch the way you're doing things. Figure it out, and then we'll go again. And then we went again, and it was way better. So, I mean, it's just, you know, again, doing the best you can. And if it doesn't work out that great, you know, the first time, second time, that's okay. But you just keep, you know, use that as an opportunity to iterate. You step up, you step up, you step up, and eventually, hopefully, it gets better. I mean, at a certain point, you just have to say, no, that's not working. And I've been there too. You know, after 3 or 4 attempts, you're like, that's garbage. And you throw it up and you try something new. But, even at that, it's just that push towards always trying to do something better.
I love that in your example, you're doing that reflective practice on the fly. Like
that's how I do everything, man.
Well, yes, me too. But I mean, like you literally are just like, oh, this isn't going great. You know what? Let's just change it right now. I feel like so many teachers would have just ridden out that class period and then come back to it tomorrow and said, or come back to it the next time they taught the unit and adjusted. Mm. And I feel like so many teachers would have done that. And the other thing I'll say is I think that you have clearly trained your kids to accept that reflective practice in you. Cause I think in most cases, if you told kids on presentation day, hey, you've got 10 minutes to undo everything I told you to do and now do something different. I feel like that would cause chaos and anger and upset with my kids sometimes. And if yours are just able to go, okay, well, that's Mr. Lawrence. That's what he does. nobody questions it.
They've come to expect that from me for sure. I mean, I'm definitely very much an on the fly kind of person. So, you know, I'll be presenting something and then some kid will ask a question about, you know, whatever we're talking about. Like, yeah, you know, that's a good point. Okay, so ignore that instruction on this little thing here. Let's do that instead because that's better. You know, I do that all the time. I mean, I didn't start out that way for sure. It was like, no, this is what I have planned, children, and we shall move forth. And it's just like that's nonsense because our kids are smart too and they know things. So, you know, why not, you know, it's what's that expression that the smartest person in the room is the room? Is that how it goes?
I don't think I've heard that one, but I like it.
I think that's the expression. I've seen it. And actually, ironically, up until this moment, I never really quite got it, but I think I get it now.
Ooh, yeah. We're making connections tonight, Shane. We're nailing it.
On the fly. Yeah.
On the fly.
Ground zero for obvious realization. Yeah. But I think, you know, the smartest person in the room is the room, right? It's not the person at the front or, you know, the old bald guy.
Whenever I think of The Room, I think of the unbelievably terrible Tommy Wiseau movie.
Yeah. I still haven't seen it. I want to, especially because there's that.
As a film study person, I feel like you are missing probably the most quintessential film study film ever studied.
Yeah. There's an art house theater in town, and they show it once a month.
Oh, it's like a nighttime showing? Those are supposed to... I've never actually been to one of those, but those are supposed to be super fun. I like to do showings with any of my friends who have never seen it before. I just make them come over and watch it. The movie's amazingly terrible.
Oh, I need to just dig up a copy of it, because like, I actually was there once right after a showing of The Room, and they were cleaning up spoons off the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I was plastic spoons. Yep.
Yeah, oh no, these weren't plastic.
Oh, nope, they were real spoons. Okay.
Yeah, and I was like, what are you doing? He's like, yeah, we just showed The Room.
That's a fancy showing.
The rooms, I live in a fancy
we
town.
Have a plastic. We have plastic for spoons.
Anyway, yeah, I've got to see it because there's that film coming out with The Disaster Artist.
Oh, I cannot tell you how excited I am for that movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I need to watch The Room and then watch that because, yeah.
I read the book. Read the book. It's so good.
Oh, okay, okay.
The Disaster Artist is based on a book. Yeah. Which is the story of the making of The Room, and the movie is very clearly the book, and it looks amazing, so I can't wait. So
awesome.
Complete tangent that has nothing to do with my podcast, but I'm going to...
It's all good.
It's out there now. It's out there.
Or you can edit it. You know, it's all good.
I could, and much like I always say, I could edit this, and then I won't.
All right, I love it.
All right, cool. Yeah, I think that, that growth mindset portion of just it can, you know, not yet kind of thing. It's not there yet kind of thing, but it's almost like in your version, it's applied constantly into everything. Is nothing is ever there yet, and that's okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Because I think, you know, once it's there, it's time to throw it out, I think. Hmm. You know, once it's like, okay, good, now it's working, it's perfect, I don't have to think about this anymore, it's like, I just get bored. You know, and I don't want to get bored. So, yeah.
Yeah, at some point, I feel like I always feel that way about teachers who sort of copy and paste their lessons year over year over year. You know what I mean? Like, and yes, they're tried and true and they have value, I'm sure, on some level. But at what point do you just become Sisyphus pushing the rock up and then going back to the bottom of the hill to try it again over and over and over again? So...
Yeah, but I mean, okay, now, like, in all fairness, though, like, I mean, I imagine if there's any other teachers that think like I do, they're thinking, what, I got to reinvent everything every year? Like, no. I mean, I reinvent, you know, a few things every year. I do not have the superhuman energy it would take to reinvent, you know, all 5, 6, or 8 courses that I teach in a year. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, there are things that do survive year over year over year, but I mean, even those, everything gets, you know, some level of polish every year, or, you know, I learn something from the previous year and I'll actually leave myself a note on the assignment sheet for next year and I'll go look it up. I'm like, oh yeah, I got to change this, this, and this. So that happens, but I mean, yeah, the major overhauls are usually like, you know, 2, 3, 4 of those per semester. Cause I can't, you can't redo everything. Cause that would just, it'd run me into the ground. I'm sure.
Well, you have 27 preps. So that's part of the problem. you teach more courses in a day, that are unique courses than most people have students in a class period. So you might be an exception case. I'll give you that.
thank you. You're too kind. You're too kind.
No, but I agree. Like reinventing portions and polishing and changing. I didn't mean to say you should just never do anything twice. I think certainly that's not true. But
yeah.
I just mean like those people that have a folder for January in a file cabinet somewhere. Like, all right, it's January. Poof.
Yep. Here's day one. I could never be that organized anyway.
No. Like, I know this not with paper. Should... Certainly not with papers.
Ugh. Yeah. Paper. Hate that stuff.
Ugh. Well, we're rocking and rolling and in all of the wrong directions. So let's just keep on going the next thing.
That's my branding coming through. It's all good.
Hey, it's my thing too. I'm all about it. It's totally fine.
It's a mutual disaster. Love it.
So I'm going to go into my third question because I know we don't really need questions for the two of us to talk. I think we talked for an hour and a half when we did your podcast recording. So I think we're
it's all good.
Solid. But anyways, my third question is, who is the best teacher you have ever had?
Okay. Can I have two people?
I would expect no less.
All right. Cause cause that, even that does a gross disservice to the number of really great teachers I've had, for sure. But one was actually in university, Dr. David Mile, and he taught my, romantic literature, in university. And he was one of these guys, he wasn't fancy, but he just made romantic literature and poetry just totally come alive. He was astounding. Just the way he could tell stories, and he would use, you know, like he went to England and he had retraced all the journeys and all the locations that all these authors had written about and like written letters and, you know, their stories and their poems. And so when we were, you know, reading, you know, lines written a few miles above Tintern Abbey, he, you know, like, this is the hill that Wordsworth sat on, and here's where he would have looked out on, and here's what it actually would have looked like. And so he brought things to life in such an incredible way that really left a huge mark on me. And I mean, I worked hard in that class, like really hard, because I wanted to, because I cared so much about the subject matter, because that's how, well, he made me care about it. So he was really memorable, and he actually taught another course on Gothic literature that I just loved as well, and the same kind of thing. So, yeah, he was someone who really mattered in my education. In high school, again, a lot of really great teachers, but the one that stood out to me, ironically, because I'm, you know, English and drama, but was my math teacher, Mr. Watt. He was actually nominated as the best teacher in the province. Actually just after I graduated, and he taught me AP, which is advanced placement, math, in grade 12, I think, maybe 11, but certainly 12. And he was just one of these guys who just had a real way of explaining things so clearly. Like we're doing all this calculus stuff, and, you know, he'd teach you, one way to do it, and then we'd struggle with that for about a day or two, and we'd kind of get our heads wrapped around it, and then he'd be like, okay, now here's the shortcut. And I'd be like, why didn't you show us that first? He's like, well, I want you to know how it works. But he just commanded such devotion from the class, even that we would come in, all of us would come in on Saturdays to do extra study sessions, for math, to the school, and he'd come in with a hockey bag full of pop and cookies that he baked at home. And we would sit around and drink pop and eat cookies and, you know, work on our calculus. So he was just, he's one of these teachers. Like, I know I'll never be that kind of person, but he could just explain things so clearly and so patiently. He had such a way, just a great rapport with everybody. I remember, I'm just going down my own little mental rabbit hole here, but like, I remember one class. I mean, the funny thing is, you know, like on my podcast, a lot of times we talk about how you remember so little of what you're taught, but you remember, you know, the moments that where connection, a personal connection was made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something I go by, you know, that I try to stand by in my own teaching career. But I remember one moment where we were doing some mathy thing. I don't remember what it was, but, you know, he was just talking away. And this is, you know, in the days of chalkboards. But he, you know, draws a circle on the chalkboard, and he's talking away, and then he stops and he steps back and he's like, that's a really good circle. I just drew a really good circle. Can anyone else draw a better circle than that? And so the next 10 minutes in class was us just trying to draw better circles by hand on the chalkboard. Like, you know, I don't remember what it was for, but just stuff like that, you know, where he had the space in his room to just, you know, stop the flow of a lesson and just be like, you know, check this out. This is interesting. So he was, oh gosh, I just thought of another one. So just tell me to shut up now. Cause he was amazing. So yeah, he was really great.
It's funny to me that what I see in common between those two is I see two things. Number one, the way they were able to gain the devotion of a class. And that's obviously reflected from you and the way that you said of both of them that you cared so much about them, and you were either them or the course, and both of those are a direct reflection of the teacher. But I think the other thing I connect with in both of those stories is in both of those teachers, I should say, is the that authentic component. You know, especially with math, it's those authentic moments that maybe don't even apply to the subject area, you know, the perfectness of his example circle certainly probably didn't tie directly to the content, but still it's that authentic moment of him being real. And the same thing with Dr. Mile, referring to the places he's been and bringing that authentic life experience into these stories that could easily be viewed as not authentic to your own life, and making mm-hmm. them so. And then that vein following all the way through your own profession now, your own practice now, is just that authenticity that you've mentioned a handful of times now from the beginning. So I think it's interesting how that vein, no, not at all. I think that's interesting how that vein weaves itself all the way through. And that's, I feel like the tie binding this whole thing together is that authenticity.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, I think, you know, even as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking of, you know, Mrs. Hunter, my grade 8 social studies teacher who taught us how to give the finger in different countries.
Very authentic. Really, you never know when you're going to need that.
That's a lesson I remember very well. But Mr. Dawes in English, who, you know, we kept on bugging him for weeks that he wanted to go outside for class. And he kept saying, no. And then one day he stepped out the room to do a photocopy, and we left him a note on the board, said, we're outside. And he came outside and he taught the rest of the class with us out in the field. You know, so, just moments like that, that's what sticks out, because, you know, and I know I learned things in those classes, and I know they were valuable, and they were important to me, not only, in terms of my academic life, but in terms of my personal life, you know, in terms of my personal formation as a human being. So, and that's as valuable as, you know, learning how to, I can't even come up with a mathy example, but, you know, learning how to, you know, find a derivative or whatever, right? I know you're not a mathy person either, so I feel like we're in the same boat here.
No, totally with you. A limit, a calc limit. I don't know what that is.
There you go, a limit. Yeah. Really, I remember I was listening to that episode and just thinking, it was just like this foggy memory of, yeah, I used to know those things a long time ago. But it is those moments of just having genuine connection with, you know, your teacher, with, I guess, someone who in some ways is, a role model, someone you're looking to for, in some, I think, really deeply subconscious level, you're looking to your teachers as you're looking for how to live. You're trying to figure yourself out. And these are adults that are in your life and they're present a lot of the time. And so you're looking to them and saying, well, how do they do it? Right. Mm-hmm. So when you get those moments that are like, well, this is how it's done, then, you know, those stuck with me anyway.
It's a terrifying thought sometimes to think about the fact that there are 125 yeah. or 150 children a year who are trying to determine how to live their life based on me. And I'm still trying to figure that out myself. So.
Yes, that is absolutely true. That is absolutely true. But there's times I come home from work, I'm like, I'm ruining this generation. I am just, they're toast. But I know, you know, some kids will come in, the best moments I have with my kids are when they come in when I'm just, you know, on a prep or, you know, at a lunch hour, and they're just like, can I chat? Or, yeah, sure. Right. Like that's, you know, that something good is happening. Hmm. Right. So
yep.
That's
the reason I feel so passionately in my own practice about making sure I still have kids, even as a coach or whatever else my role may be. Like, I need a group of kids assigned to me, even if it's a period a day or two kids a period or whatever it is. I need some amount of students that I still get to interact with and connect with and make sure I have that part of my job in place. So important to me.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I mean, if you're not in the education, you know, in the education field for the students, I mean, especially at this level, maybe, you know, at a higher level, fine, you're there for the research and whatever else. But at this level, if you're not there for the kids, I mean, what are you there for?
Yeah.
Right? The only thing I think of is a paycheck, like, honestly. Because unless people really like marking, which I don't. Haven't met anyone yet. He was like, yay, marking.
That's so, nobody's favorite part.
Nobody's favorite part. So.
Well, Shane, it's been nearly an hour, man. I really appreciate you sitting and talking with me. The time has flown by.
Yeah. Oh, man, anytime.
So how can people connect with you?
People can connect with me on Twitter. I'm at the Ed Podcast. Email is theedpodcast@gmail.com. Really honestly, like, Twitter's where I hang out the most. And my podcast is theedpodcast.podbean.com, or you can just search up The Ed Podcast on iTunes and subscribe there. That is pretty much it, short of, you know, visiting me, in which case, you know, shoot me something on Twitter and yeah, we'll hang out.
Cool. Hey, I really, and maybe one day I'll make it up there to the bitter north, and I
would love that.
Say hi.
I'm going to be close to you this week. I'm going to be down in Texas for like 24 hours.
That is much closer than where you are, but that's not actually close.
No, it's not close, but it's I'm closing the gap. I'm doing my part.
You're doing your part.
Texas, I'll
true.
Come down.
That's true.
You can meet me in the airport.
Well, Shane, I had a great time and I really appreciate it, man.
Right on, back at you.
All right, have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Right.
Thank you again, Shane, for talking with me. I really appreciate it. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversations as we jump all over the place. If you want to connect with Shane, you can find him on Twitter. He's at The Ed Podcast. And find his podcast by looking up Ed Conversations in any podcasting app or by going to theedpodcast.podbean.com. I also have a link in the show notes to the episode of his show I was on. We go all over the place and talk about a ton of different topics, and I don't really remember everything we talked about, but I remember it being a lot of fun. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Streffler. I love to hear from you guys. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Until next week, remember that there are no subjects in life. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.